You are listening to Making Bank, where we uncover the mindset and success strategies of the top 1% so you can amplify your life and your business.
Welcome to Making Bank. I am Josh Felber, where we uncover the mindset and the success strategies of the top 1% so you can amplify your life and your business today. I'm super honored and excited for today's guest. He's a New York Times best-selling author of Wealth Can't Wait. He has become a passionate educator, sharing with candor his journey to financial freedom and the well-cultivated methodologies that helped him get there. Today, David Osborne has built and is the co-owner of one of the top real estate brokerages in the world with more than 5,000 agents and annual sales volumes exceeding $12 billion per year. He has also founded over 50 companies with at least 25 that are ongoing profitable. And David has continued success allows him freedom to pour time into his priorities, being the best father and husband to his wonderful family and giving back to others, as well as teaching people how to achieve success so they too can live a life of abundance. I want to welcome David Osborne to Making Bank.
Josh, how are you, brother? Great to be with you. What a great intro you just did. Your energy is through the roof. I love it.
Awesome, man. Well, it's so amazing to finally be able to have you on the show. I know we connected a few years back and got to spend a little bit of time hanging out together, talking to you and learning kind of what your mindset and your strategy have gotten you, from just starting out to where you are today and, how you built one of the world's largest real estate companies. And so it's just an honor to have you on Making Bank today. So thank you for your time.
Hey, great to be with you, Josh. Thanks for having me on. And I know we've been trying to get this done for a while now, and it's been good to get to know you over the last couple of years.
For sure. So tell me a little bit about how you got started, as an entrepreneur. Let's kind of just start there.
Okay, sure. So my first business was actually cutting yards. I'm a lawnmower kid. You always bump into people that had paper routes or lawn mowing companies or were selling candy at school or something like that. So a lot of entrepreneurs started early. I cut yards and I eventually grew that to three trucks. So I had three trucks working for me. One of the guys stole one of the trucks from me. I was dumb enough to put it in his name. So I guess he didn't really steal it. I was just so naive back then. I bought a $500 truck, so it wasn't a super expensive vehicle. And then I was like, hey, let me just put it in your name because that way we don't have to transfer title later. And he was like, thank you very much. And he took it with a lot of my tools. But it was a blast. That was my early foray into entrepreneurship. I was 17 when I started that company. And so I've been doing it for a long time.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, and that's, where I'm at too. I mean, 14 for me. And so we're kind of, in that same realm of starting out in that kid business type, kid entrepreneurship and kind of growing from there. What was your progression then, starting out, with the lawn business and stuff? I mean, did you move on to other entrepreneurial ventures before you got to the real estate company or?
I went to college. My dad was like, college Marines are out of the house. I really wanted to build my lawn mowing company. In hindsight, he was correct. So he gave me three choices, Marines, college, or you're on your own. And I was like, okay, I don't think I want to build a lawn mowing company on my own. So let me go to college. So I went to college, wasn't a great student actually, but worked my way through college and always enjoyed working, always enjoyed making bank, as you say. I liked working a lot. I mean, I think for me, Josh, I didn't have a lot of significance from athletics. I wasn't a great athlete. I wasn't terrible, but I was never like the star of any team I was on. But making money seemed like a very simple thing for me, that the harder I worked, the more money I got. And it also gave me significance. So I did that for a while, graduated college, and then I went door-to-door sales company where I was selling like literally computer systems door-to-door. It was kind of like selling copiers. That was really tough. And then I sold everything I own and went hitchhiking around the world, which was probably the ultimate entrepreneurial experience. I hitchhiked around the world for 2 years and 3 months and, pretty incredible in hindsight experience. The only reason I did it is because my best bud in college, that's what his family did. They'd done it for years. And he was like, come with me. And I was like, no, I want to get a job and go to work. And my first working environment where I was doing this door-to-door sales, the boss was so abusive. She abused her position and her power that I eventually, after a year, was like, you know, I'm out. I'm not going to do this anymore. So I said, sure, I'll come with you. So I sold everything, my car. I was actually one of the top two or three salespeople every month at that company, but the conditions just weren't appropriate. So I bailed on that. I went hitchhiking around the world for 2 years and 3 months. And on the way, I met a lady who I thought I'd fallen in love with. Turned out I hadn't, but we did some property in South Africa together. We built rental properties, rehabbed old buildings as rentals, and hitchhiked up through all the way through Africa to Cape Town, went to India, went to Brazil, and then came home deeply in debt. My credit cards had been maxed out, and my mom was a realtor, and she said, why don't you come work with me in real estate? And I said, Mom, I don't want to work in real estate. I want to find a real job, but I need work, so I'll come work right now while I look for a real job. And here I am 27 years later, still looking for a real job and deeply involved in real estate.
What were some of the, you know, a couple, I guess, things, you know, when you went out for that 2 year sabbatical, traveling the world and everything, you know, because that, I think that just is such an educational piece, you know, even though it may have not looked like it initially when you first did it. You know, what were some of the things that you picked up along that way that have helped you today?
It was an unbelievable experience in hindsight. We lived on $20 a day. So I'd saved up $7,000, actually 10 total after I sold my car. But the ticket was $3,000. I was supposed to go for 1 year, so $7,000 would have got me through 1 year at $20 a day. And that's where I started from, is I got $20 a day to spend. Well, the big aha is, like, to a Western person, $7,000 is nothing. But to the places I was traveling in Africa, that was 10 times the money they made in a year. I mean, they were living, you know, people were living on $300. And the generosity of people that had nothing, the fact that they found a way to enjoy life. Now, sure, there were troubles and there's crimes. I'm not idealizing a primitive life by any means. What I'm saying is realizing how lucky we are to live in the United States, how limited people's opportunities are. Warren Buffett says you won the lottery the day you were born in the United States. So, and I think it's true. But the other aha I had was I'd meet people and I'd be like, surely you want to come live in America. And they'd be like, are you crazy? You Americans work way too hard. You know, I have a family of 300 people. We get together every weekend and have a barbecue or eat rice together. And so just all the preconceptions you have of the universe, you know, are blown away when you spend that much time traveling around the world. In India, I saw the slums. Like, when I was in India, 700 million people lived below the poverty line. This was a long time ago. I think they're way up. I think it's only like 300 million people now. But when you talk poverty line over there, you're talking, you know, plastic tarps between two pallets, and that's their home, right? And this is a city of people living like that. It's incredible. And they're hustling all the time. And that's the other thing, is how hard people hustle. Like in Egypt, they're hitting you all the time. We made it illegal to panhandle in the United States, but that's really the essence of, you know, if you're poor and you got to eat, you're going to go try to sell whatever you can try to sell to get food to eat. And I learned from that journey that, you know, I can't remember what percentage, 40% of the people every day they wake up and their goal that day is to eat. So just imagine that, like the gratitude, the appreciation, the overall like realization of how lucky we are in the United States of America was one of the greatest gifts.
No, I think that's definitely true, and that's, you know, one of the things that I talk to, you know, I go through with my kids on a daily basis, is just, you know, understanding the gratitude for where they're at, what they have opportunity wise. And you know what's around them and everything compared to other places. So that's super cool, because I don't think we realize that enough, and a lot of times our challenges here are trivial kind of compared to the rest of the world.
They're so trivial. I mean, in reality, if you're a lower middle class American, you're better than probably 80% of the world, maybe 85%. And the other thing I learned from all that travel is to be opportunistic. Like, so many wonderful things happened to me. People would let me sleep on their couch. They'd wash our laundry. Our tent got torn up by some riffraff, I guess, at one place. And then another lady stitched it all back together. So we had like the Frankenstein tent that had been sewed back together. The generosity of people. Our car broke down. We rented a car in Malawi, So we could go scuba diving in Lake Malawi. So it was a splurge. Anytime we do something like that, it was a splurge. Well, on the way back, the car broke down. We barely made it across the desert. They actually told us not to drive it in the desert, but we did anyway. And fortunately, we made it back to the highway, and then it broke down. And these two African dudes dropped their bicycles, and they just said – they pushed our car for like 45 minutes, you know, like almost at a jog to their village, which was up the road. And then the head villager, they only had one car in the village, and he drove us back to the city. We were able to call the rental car company. He kept our car for us. And the craziest thing about all this, we didn't really have any money either. So we were able to give him some cookies, I think. There was no way. And they didn't do it for that. They just did it because of the generosity of their spirit. And so the lessons that came from that, and, you know, that was amazing. And then being opportunistic, asking, looking for things, like all of that awareness of living that raw, you could bring it into entrepreneurship. Because what is entrepreneurship? It's looking for the opportunity, keeping wide awake. Most people, I think, sleep through life, go with what's safe and secure. Well, when you're hitchhiking around the world, there's no sleeping. You got to be wide awake all the time. And that was one of the gifts of that.
That's awesome. No, that's super cool that you were able to get out and do that. So then coming back, you know, you got started reluctantly in real estate. And what, how did you go from, I guess, being, you know, real estate sales to, you know, now it's, you know, one of the largest companies out there?
I was super lucky, honestly. And by the way, that's the other thing about hitchhiking around the world. You realize providence is one of my favorite words, and how often providence would show up and help us with a ride that we needed when we were hitchhiking, or with food when we were starving, or to repair our tent when our tent had been torn apart. The amount of Goethe says that be bold and strange forces will come to your aid. And in business, I just got lucky. I joined Keller Williams with my mom as an agent, and I was the fifth. She was the fifth agent at Keller Williams. I was probably the 800th agent. Today, there's 180,000. So after 3 years of selling real estate, working with my mom, and we became the number one team in the third year working together. But again, she had a great reputation and a great practice to begin with. I got sick of selling. I didn't want to sell real estate anymore. Well, the company happened to be expanding very fast. So they asked me to go, you know, they mentored me and groomed me to go open franchises. And I was able to get coaching from Mo Anderson and Gary Keller and Mark Willis and all these early people in Keller Williams that went on to be fabulously successful. But at that time, I think, you know, Gary was losing money on the company. Mo had taken a risk joining it. And, you know, these were all very humble beginnings for these folks that I have to get so much time from. And then I just went up to North Texas, New Mexico. I had very little money. My mom backed me, and we opened franchises together. I was the operator. She was the wisdom and the money and the reputation. And, we just slowly started to build, and I went very aggressive in it, and I grew as fast as I could. And after about 5 years, I guess I bought my mom out, and then I expanded and bought all these master franchises, territories. Keller Williams hired me to come back to Austin, be the president of Core Services, and it really just blew up from there. And I think the only thing I did was using that awareness from hitchhiking around the world or anything of being an entrepreneur, I just took advantage of everything I could. So I bought. I bought more franchises. I failed at them. I was terrible at first. But over time, by going all in, I was able to build a pretty large business. And I didn't do it to say I would be the fourth largest residential real estate company in the U.S. I just did it because it was right there in front of me. It seemed like the thing to do, just like hitchhiking around the world. When I was in South Africa, it seemed like the thing to go do was go to Nairobi. And once I decided I didn't like sales and I started opening franchises, it seemed like it was just as easy to open many as it was to open one. And it was just the next thing to do. So that kind of byproduct of opening all those franchises led to being number one. But I can't say I went in with a strategy of building the number one real estate company inside Keller Williams.
Sure. No, and I would suspect then too, you know, along as you're growing this and building it and kind of, you know, figuring it all out and everything, you know, what were some of the, I guess, you know, a couple of the biggest challenges that you ran into?
So the biggest challenge, which I think is true for every entrepreneur, was myself. My biggest challenge was my own stupidity and my own lack of experience, my own lack of capability. So the number one thing that changed my life was me changing me. And to do that, I had to be trained, be educated. Early on, it was a lot of Tony Robbins teaching me the inspirational, motivational piece Once I got that engine, you know, figured out, once I got my engine running effectively, it was Gary Keller, it was Warren Buffett, it was, you know, all the great teachers that are out there, the books that you can read, the knowledge you can gain. Your own limitation, you are your biggest limitation in all aspects of your life. You're your own limitation as a father, your own limitation in health, your own limitation as a husband, and your own limitation in business. So once I started, and by the way, I was a C student. So just to put this in perspective, I hated school and I was a terrible student. I always felt like, why, who are you to teach me? I'm never going to need to learn how to calculate the angle of an obtuse triangle. So why the heck am I doing it? I was a rebel. But once I got into business and what I learned applied immediately and created better success to me. And again, I was lucky that Gary Keller was so obsessed with learning. So you are your biggest obstacle. I was my biggest obstacle. I became aware at some point that all of my success was just outside of my peripheral vision, right up here and above me. And the only way I could get to that next level of success was to grow as a person so I could see further and understand more. So I became obsessed with, you know, back then it was books on tape. Today it would be podcasts, Audible, reading books, going to seminars. I started spending 50 or 100 grand a year. What is the college education nowadays? 50 grand a year. I was spending 50 to 100 grand a year on education as I was able to afford it more. And all of the things I learned, I applied. And as I applied them, I got better. One of the best things I learned was that it's all about leverage through other people. So I learned how to hire, learned how to get into business with great people. My business partner, Smokey, who runs this business that we're co-owners of, is phenomenal. And I was able to find him and merge our two companies together. And that's how we were able to build to that position. Paul Morris, who runs LA, is an amazing guy that I've been able to work with for a number of years that runs a business that makes me over seven figures. He also makes over seven figures. And so learning how to leverage through talent was one of the best learnings I had. So yeah, the biggest obstacle always is and still is to this day, me. But the opportunity to learn and grow is phenomenal. And yeah, so I became addicted to knowledge and growth and learning. And that's why your podcast is such a favor to your listeners, because it's not about what you know, it's about who you are as a person and how much you can grow as a person. That'll lead directly to your success.
Yeah, that's the truth. I know with, you seeking out, you know, mentorship and other people to learn from, I think plays a significant role in accelerating, you know, your learning curve as well as that journey and that path that you're on. I mean, obviously that's where we initially connected, was through a mastermind and everything, and surrounding ourselves with, you know, those higher level people to, you know, help and talk and teach and, you know, learn from each other and everything. So.
Yeah. And it can't be, they don't have to be higher level too, but that is definitely a benefit. It's also peers, like seeing guys, sometimes it's just seeing people going, I mean, people meet me all the time. They're like, well, heck, if he can do it, I must be able to do it, right? So sometimes it's just seeing peers where it's normal to go through the trials and tribulations we go through. I think the great thing about being an entrepreneur is it's going to – your actions matter so much. If you have a job at IBM, what are you going to do to move the needle at IBM? Probably not that much, unless you're inventing something new like an AI or something. But as an entrepreneur, there's only you in the world, and your success is a direct reflection of who you are and the actions you take and who you become. And so the great thing about what we do is every little bit of wisdom and knowledge we can add has a direct output on the world we see. I believe that the entire world we're in is a full manifestation of how we think and how we see. And people can say, oh, but bad things can happen to you. Yeah, a plane could crash into my house right now and blow it up. But it's how you react to that that matters. It's like, yeah, you can't always control the acts, but you can control how you respond to those acts. And that's the journey of life, is accepting 100% responsibility for everything and then doing your best to modify, change, and improve yourself as you go forward. And peer groups do that. Training does that. And listening to things like Making Bank does that for you.
So tell me, in your book, you know, like Wealth Can't Wait, you talk about a lot of different ideas for generating wealth and, you know, investing and multiple streams, you know, of income and everything. You know, now we're in 2019. Where do you see kind of, you know, the opportunities for people moving forward, you know, in that area?
Well, the one big risk to you is the cushy job trap, right? So in the book, we talk about that. If you get caught in a job that pays you well and you become comfortable, that is the enemy of entrepreneurial success. I had breakfast with a kid this morning and he's making 130 grand a year. And I had to go over this with him because he's like, I want to be an entrepreneur. I'm like, you're in great danger. And he's like, why? He's 26 years old. I said, you're making so much money that you might just sell out your future for a comfortable present. And that's what the cushy job trap does. It causes you to sell out your future for the comfortable present. You're like, yeah, someday I'll do that. Then you're making 180, 200. I know a guy making between 500 and a million a year in medical sales, and he doesn't like his job. But how do you walk away from 500 to $1 million a year? I mean, a bad year is 500, a good year is a million. So he's trapped in that, and he never gets to be the entrepreneur, because how do you ever leave that? I don't think I could. So the sooner you start taking action towards your dreams, the better. It can be a side hustle to begin with, but ultimately, you know, I think in today's world, the opportunities are the internet. I mean, there are kids pushing stuff on the internet. There's more and more, so it gets crowded all the time. But you don't have to go build a storefront anymore. It used to be that if you came up with Spanx, you had to go sell them through Nordstrom's. But now you can just sell them all online, right? You can do educational programs, but it's super crowded. You could write books, but very few of them make it. But you have this platform with the internet to reach everybody. So I think that's one opportunity. The other thing is to just understand who you are and function from that place. I do some speaking, but I'm not a speaker. My friend Hal Elrod is a speaker. He is phenomenal. He lights up the world. He's like a superstar. If I tried to be Hal Elrod, I would fail. So you got to know who you are and where your angle is. By the way, Hal couldn't probably do what I do either. What I do is I look for opportunities, find the right talent, and try to leverage those opportunities into cash flowing opportunities for me. The one that never goes away is real estate. It may be boring to some, and it may not be the place to change the world. But if you build enough cash flow from real estate, you can then have all your time back to go change the world. So I'm a huge fan of residential or multifamily real estate or anything in real estate, frankly. I know for every one Hal Elrod that's made makes all that money from royalties from selling books and speaking, there's 100 real estate investors that are quietly financially free because they bought wisely and they figured out how to find value in real estate, you know, take advantage of it, rent it out, and create cash flow. So I'm a big fan of real estate and always will be. But opportunities are boundless. I think there's more opportunities today than there ever have been before.
Sure. One of the things too, and you've mentioned it a few times, you know, is finding the right people, you know, to build, you know, kind of your team and everything around you. You know, what are some of the things that you specifically look for that you've been able to identify over the years that's you've been able to find those awesome people for your team?
Yeah. So people, I used to think it was all about what I did and how hard I worked, which it is to some degree. You have to master yourself. But now I realize it's all about other people. Like, so there's no way you scale to the scale that I've got to if you don't have amazing, incredible people in business with you. Just like I'm a part of Gary Keller's world and everything I do impacts his financial world. Or not everything, but many things. So I have great people working for me. So how do you find those people? Well, the first way to find great people is to become a great person. So what does a great person look like? Well, they're purposeful, they're focused, they have balance, they have a contribution in their life. So you just develop all those traits. But the number one thing I see about successful people is they're purposeful. So you have to be incredibly purposeful with your time and with your life and have a vision and have goals. And that's why I'm kind of obsessed with goals. And you've probably seen me share this before, but that's my goals for 2019. This is everything. This is all the personal. These are all the business. I read this probably 100 times a year, twice a week at least. And I go through them. I see if I'm on track there. You can see all these check marks. I'm engaged with this. That's the 240 workouts that I do a year. So you have to be purposeful. And if you're purposeful, you'll attract purposeful people. The more you develop yourself. So then you have to be purposeful about meeting people. So I reach out for mentors all the time. When I started a private equity firm, I emailed two of the top private equity firm owners in Austin, said, hey, what do I have to do to earn coffee with you? When I sat down and had coffee with them, I had my questions, but I start off by, you know, asking flattering questions, trying to make them feel comfortable and really put myself in a student position and make sure they're the master. They're up on the pedestal teaching me. And then once we got comfortable, I started asking them all my questions. Then I went and implemented them. I sent them a thank you. I sent them I made a donation to each of their charities in their name, thanking them for the time. It would be crass to offer them money. They don't need money. So I built that. Then they became friends because I kept doing that, kept asking for lunch. And ultimately, they became peers of mine, which they have become now. So it's a never-ending journey of seeking out those mentors. And then on peers, you just go to mastermind groups. You go to Tony Robbins or you go to whatever, and you sort of filter through and find out who your peers are. And then it's very important that peer group are up-and-comers that are superstars, because you will become the people you hang out with the most. So you want to hang out with an exceptional group of people, which, again, you earn your right into that. by being an exceptional, responsible person. So, I mean, I was at a friend's house last night washing the dishes for his wife while she put her kid to bed while talking to him. And I, you know, it's conscious service. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm here having dinner with you, but I'm also here to clean the dishes. I'll do whatever it takes to earn my friendships and to, you know, build an amazing community around me. And by the way, the guy also cleans my pool every time he's here. I have no idea why, but he always picks up the pool cleaner and starts cleaning pulling out the toys the kids have left in the pool. So it's just, you know, that's what winning is. It's like being of service to everyone you meet, but also selecting the community that you choose to be around with and make sure that just as you earn the right to be in their space, they earn the right to be in your space. And that's from a peer point of view and then from a mentor point of view also. And then you read the books, listen to the tapes, keep sharpening the saw, look after the body, be a great husband and father first. It's a beautiful package once you really get on the journey of self-development and excellence. Takes a lot of time though.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, you have to make the investment to, you know, get to that end result or that reward or that, you know, to what you're looking for. So super cool. We got a few minutes left. What's one question, you're thinking, man, I wish Josh would ask this. What's one question I should have asked you, or maybe something you've never shared before that you're just like, hey guys, I really want you guys to know this.
Huh. You know, I'll tell you what it is. I don't know if I wanted you to ask it, but I got asked it earlier today. A guy said to me, you know, I coached him and he said, hey, I just feel like I'm stressed and lost all the time. I told him after the coaching call, you're on it. You're running a tight ship. I talk to a lot of people. They're not as tight as you. He goes, you know, it doesn't feel that way. So what I would tell your listeners is it never feels that way. Like you could be, you know, I don't feel that way. So I feel like it's sloppy and messy and out of control. I'm sure that Elon Musk feels the same way. Like it never gets to a point where you're like, oh, I figured it all out now. It's going amazingly well. That wouldn't be courage. It wouldn't be victory to live in a world where everything was certain and confident. The uncertainty is something you have to get to learn to live with. You live with that uncertainty and that feeling of confusion. Don't ever think there's an arrived point where someone that you're seeing on stage, you know, Richard Branson, oh, he's arrived. His life is just figured out. It's not that way. It's always there's a certain amount of uncertainty. There's a certain amount of doubt. There's a certain amount of self-reflection or self-questioning that goes on all the way through your life. So that might take away some of the fear because people, I think, oh, that guy's figured it all out, but no one's figured it all out. They're just on this journey together and creating, you know, courage is acting in the absence of certainty. And so just, you know, that's when I think that people don't realize they see people talking, communicating effectively, and they think, oh, that guy's figured it all out. I don't think anyone's figured it all out. I think everyone, you either slip into comfort and then check out, or if you're striving, you're constantly dealing with doubt.
No, that's awesome. Yeah, no, I think that's super true. I just, you get bored at that. You figure it all out. There's nothing else to continue to figure out. So always having that challenge and, you know, and loving and enjoying that whole process, you know, I think is super important and what continues to push you, me, you know, other people out there and everything.
And that's the other thing, what you just said, it is the process. The journey is the destination. I know it's an old cliche, but, you know, it might seem like it takes longer and it's harder than it should be. And then when you arrive at a certain level of success and you look back, you realize everything that happened had to happen for you to get to where you were. So in other words, yeah, it took me 10 years to get to be very successful in residential real estate, but every year of those 10 was important to create lessons that are now my foundation for me to build even bigger and taller on. So no matter how long it takes, just understand that every single step matters in the journey of self-actualization.
Sweet. All right, guys. Hey, we're all out of time with David. I hope you guys were taking notes. Make sure you guys rewind, listen to this again, watch this again, and really pay attention to what David is saying. He dives into some amazing insights, some super great golden nuggets for you guys to pull out of this. And it only takes one for you to transform, move ahead, you know, his strategies, his mindset, how he thinks about everything. That's took him from, you know, where he was, you know, to where he is today. So make sure you guys are taking notes, rewind, watch again. And again, David, thank you for coming on Making Bank. It was an honor to have you on the show and just spending your time here and sharing your insights today.
Great to be with you, Josh. Thanks so much for having me.
I am Josh Felber. Get out and be extraordinary.
Thank you for listening to Making Bank. If you have enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. And sharing is caring. Follow Josh Felber on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram for more. You can also listen to Making Bank on Amazon Alexa, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and watch on Apple TV, Success Thinkers Network, Amazon Fire, and YouTube.